stories, the emergence of a possibly more infectious COVID variant in South Africa is causing travel restrictions and hitting global markets. Iran warning again that the success of the upcoming Vienna talks is tied to the U.S. moving first to remove all sanctions. Also in the headline, yet another move that could provoke China's reaction, a second group of American lawmakers this month visiting Taiwan. Those were the top stories. Welcome. A new coronavirus variant in South Africa is triggering falls in global stocks and energy markets. In Asia, Japan's Nikkei is down by a staggering 3%. European stock markets plunged more than 3% at the start of trading. In the US, the S&P 500 futures sank 1%. Oil prices are also experiencing a shock, with US crude oil futures falling 2.7%. The shaky markets come in reaction to South African scientists announcing a new COVID variant with many mutations a day earlier. They're blaming the new variant for the rapid growth in infections. The European Union is now considering a travel ban on the South African region, with several member states already imposing restrictions. Several Asian countries have also tightened border controls. The World Health Organization will meet later on Friday to discuss the new strain. Earlier, I spoke to our correspondent in Cape Town, Hassan Syria. Listen to him explain what experts have so far found about the South African variant of COVID-19 and what it might mean.
Well, of course, these are still very early days, Arash, and what the experts are saying at this point is they are very carefully and attentively assessing the developments with this new variant, B.1.1.529. What they say is that what they've noticed so far is, for example, in South Africa during the earlier part of this month, we were seeing very low infection rates of about only 200 to 300. But within the past few days, that number has expanded tenfold. So we're looking now at cases, new cases of COVID infections that exceeds 2,500, for example, in South Africa. What they're saying that means is that there's a possibility that this variant has the ability for high transmissibility, that the infection rate can be very high. What they're still not sure about is whether it will cause as serious an infection and sort of disease or symptoms within those people that are infected, or whether it will be a milder form of infection that people will experience.
COVID-19 is spreading fast across Europe, pushing some states to bring back tight curbs to control the surge. In Germany, more than 76,000 infections and hundreds of deaths in one day. Chancellor Angela Merkel has warned about the situation, urging tougher measures to battle the current wave of the pandemic. In the Czech Republic, a 30-day state of emergency is in place, with the government imposing restrictions on some public places and events ahead of Christmas. Limits come on top of earlier restrictions already in place for the unvaccinated. Portugal is also returning mask mandates and new travel rules to limit the spread of infections.
Masks are from now mandatory in all indoor spaces that are not exempted by Directorate General of Health. Tests are also mandatory for any entry into national territory, whatever the country of origin is and whatever the nationality of the passport is.
The new measures in Portugal will come into force at the start of December. In Slovakia, hospitals are fighting a surge in unvaccinated patients, with some centers already reaching their limits. Slovakia has reported its highest caseload in the last few days. The Netherlands is planning stronger measures to curb the increase in daily cases. And in the UK, infections have been rising sharply in recent days despite the high vaccination rate. Iran warns the upcoming Vienna talks will fail unless the U.S. agrees to scrap all anti-Tehran sanctions first. Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani stressed that any progress in talks depends on sanctions removal and a guarantee that a future U.S. administration would not abandon the deal again. The Iranian official made the comments during an interview with the British daily Independent. Iran and the remaining signatories of the 2015 nuclear deal are set to start a new round of talks in the Austrian capital on November the 29th. Negotiations are aimed at removing anti-Tehran measures. Former U.S. President Donald Trump, as you know, pulled his country out of the U.N. Security Council-endorsed nuclear deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Tehran. Welcome to our news review. Tehran says the International Atomic Energy Agency is under the influence of its sponsor states that are seeking to politicize Iran's nuclear program. A spokesman for Iran's Atomic Energy Organization is critical of the IAEA's approach to Iran as a country that remains in compliance with the safeguards agreement it has with the UN Nuclear Agency. Behrouz Kamalbandi explained that Iran cannot grant the IAEA inspectors access to its site in Karaj because there are no nuclear substances there and the facility is therefore not included in its commitments under the safeguards deal. Washington is threatening to confront Tehran at the IAEA, accusing it of refusing to cooperate with the agency. The U.S. wants Iran to let the IAEA reinstall cameras at the Karaj site. The facility was targeted by a sabotage attack in June. Guests who join me to discuss this part of the program with include our very own correspondent and my good friend, Homa Lesky, from Vienna. It's good to see you. As well as Honorable Peter Koenig. He's a geopolitical analyst who joins us via Skype out of Geneva. It's good to have you with us both on the show. I'm going to begin perhaps with the latest and what the hearings are in Vienna. Homa?
Yes, Arash, good to see you as well. Now, you mentioned there the Karaj workshop, which has been at the center of various debates here in the context of the IAEA Board of Governors session. And as you rightly pointed out, the U.S. has now used this issue to warn that this actually might cause the United States and its partners at the IAEA Board of Governors and its allies to call for an extraordinary session of the board before the end of the year, maybe in a month, they've suggested, to increase pressure on Iran, maybe to come up with a resolution against the country. And this, of course, is being seen as a step that is going to seriously jeopardize, if it happens, the negotiations that are set to resume after a few months here in Vienna. They went into a pause, or they stopped basically when the previous government, the Rouhani government, exited and we had the new government in place. And now they're about to start, and as the Russian ambassador here put it, there is an atmosphere of hope and optimism that these talks are going to lead to renewed efforts get the JCPOA back in place. But just going back to the issue of the Karaj workshop, yesterday when we were talking with the Iranian representative here at the IAEA, he was telling us that there are two issues to consider here. One of them is the fact that the access that the agency had to this workshop in Karaj was given under the JCPOA. And we know that Iran has stopped implementing its commitments under the JCPOA as a result of a law that was passed by Parliament. And that law was passed because, of course, the United States withdrew from the deal and Iran was not benefiting and the Europeans did not make up for the reimposition of sanctions. So this is something that the government was obliged to do. So he was saying that the agency does not have this capacity now and does not have this permission to access that because Iran was giving access to that facility under its JCPOA commitments. As far as the safeguards commitments go between Iran and the agency, this is not part of those safeguards commitments. And of course, there are other issues that the agency has been discussing, the safeguards issue. We won't go into them now, but I'd just also like to say that we also refer to the attack you mentioned there that has been blamed on Israel, the sabotage attack, the terrorist attack, Iran calls it. And one of the cameras of the agency was destroyed, we're hearing, in this attack. And Iran is saying that this is still under the whole workshop is still under an investigation, a judicial and security investigation, and has even asked, Iran has even asked the IAEA, it says, to cooperate with the country or help it or facilitate this investigation. So these are the two points that he pointed when it comes to this specific workshop in Karaj.
Okay. Mr. Peter Koenig in Geneva, what do you think about this issue? We're talking about a site, a nuclear site in Iran that basically, as Iran says, does not include any nuclear material. As Homa pointed out right now, it is not within the agreement with the IAEA to be inspected. And, of course, the other issue is that it has a history of being attacked. The question is really why, at this time that we are about a week away from the, less than that, from the nuclear talks, why would such an issue be even raised by the IAEA?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I don't really know where to start, but I would agree, of course, fully, 100% with your correspondent in Vienna. There's absolutely no reason to install new cameras to inspect this site, which was never included in any agreement. So there is absolutely no reason now to start with this. But let me, if I may, backtrack a little bit. You know, first, I think there is, in general, the big picture is there is no reason, absolutely no reason, and no need for Iran to renegotiate anything. You know, that was agreed in 2015 by all the parties, and the reason that Trump came and under pressure from Israel to not recognize the deal is actually immaterial. This deal, as far as I'm concerned, is still valid, and Iran has complied with it. Who has not complied with it was the West. And I think they never did, and I think whatever Iran will do, the West will not be happy. So in my opinion, and I mean this is my opinion which I've written about many times, and I've also said it in interviews here to Press TV, there's no need to renegotiate anything. Besides, what has happened in the meantime, within the last 6 months, Iran has moved on. Iran has become a full-fledged member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, which was created by China and Russia, and by now includes about half the world population and controls more than one-third of the world's GDP. So Iran is fully integrated in this Eastern Association, and does not need anymore to be pressured by the U.S. Of course, the U.S. won't let that happen. And I also know, of course, there are lots of people in Iran who would still hold on to the West. That's fine. You know, you can deal with both. But you shouldn't be succumbing to the constant pressure of particularly one country that pulls along the rest of the Western countries, namely Europe, and will not leave Iran in peace. Whatever Iran will do, I can guarantee you, it will never be enough for the United States. And so I think this is my opinion, you know. Of course, stick to all what, since you started now with the negotiation, actually you will start with them on Monday, I believe, stick to what your correspondent in Vienna said. That's a very, very sound basis. But overall, keep in mind, there's no need. You know, Iran does not have to submit anymore and submissive to the West's demand. That is a country that is sovereign, that can stand up for itself and has an association and allies, firm allies now in the East. So therefore, I think you should stand on very firm feet and not accept any pressure anymore from the West.
Many, many thanks, both of you. Homa Lezgi, our good correspondent in Vienna, as well as Honorable Peter Koenig, geopolitical analyst. It was wonderful to speak to you both. Thank you very much for your time, and have a good day. Please stay with us. Welcome back. The leader of a U.S. congressional delegation visiting Taiwan says Washington's commitment to the island is rock solid, a fresh sign of U.S. support for Taiwan that will likely enrage China.
Our commitment to Taiwan is rock solid and has remained steadfast as the ties between us has deepened. Taiwan is a democratic success story, a reliable partner, and a force for good in the world.
Mark Takano made the remarks in a meeting with Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen, who also told the American lawmakers that her government will continue to step up cooperation with Washington to uphold shared values and ensure stability in the region. The five-member bipartisan delegation arrived in Taiwan on Thursday. This is the second time this month that the U.S. lawmakers visit the islands. The first visit drew a strong rebuke from China. The White House has also invited Taipei to a democracy summit, angering Beijing, which called the move a mistake. China, mind you, views Taiwan as its own territory and is against any official interaction with the island. And that's it with international news. Stay tuned.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
It happened in the year of the revolution. The U.S. embassy takeover was humiliation enough, and America deployed ships to the Persian Gulf. Shortly after, Imam Khomeini, leader of the revolution, called for the formation of the Basij, an auxiliary force, on November the 26th, 1979. And the anniversary of the formation of the Basij each year marks Basij Week. The Basij is a people's force, meaning a force for the people, made up of a good portion of the population, to be mobilized in wartime and engage in developmental activities in peacetime. Now, how much that entity has actually done and what keeps it true to its cause we'll be attempting in this episode. So stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today. As a subsidiary of the IRGC, or Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the Basij is often forgotten to be a force from the people, although the IRGC, or SEPA, also basically came from the same stock, that's deprived walks of life. The Basij has six major groupings. I got to talk to two, one of them being the Student Basij. Mr. Mofrad is head of the Student Basij, although members consider it egalitarian more than rigidly hierarchical. He gave us an interview in his office in what was the Americans' only section of what was once the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, now known as the Den of Espionage.
The identity of the Basij, which is to mobilize, prepare, and equip the people to expand their participation in their country's development, has been preserved all these years. That is, if the organization loses the identity or mission, it will lose its basic function. However, the issues people have been involved in over the past 4 years have depended on what was needed at the time. For example, there has been a need for military participation in the country at some point, and so the general manifestation of Basij was on the battlefields. At another point, when the country needed reconstruction and similar services, the people further contributed to the development of deprived villages and areas.
The students were unpaid volunteers, priding themselves for generating their own ideas to mobilize authorities, didn't appear to feel like anyone's subsidiary. They said it didn't matter who was in power giving orders, long as it was to serve the country and ultimately steer it towards the fulfillment of Islamic rulership and the salvation of all.
We set up a large vaccination center here at the former U.S. Embassy. The representatives from the health ministry have praised the center as one of the cleanest, most stylish, and effective vaccination centers in the country that provides services around the clock. And a significant number of people came into the perimeter of the former U.S. Embassy and received services here. We believe perhaps the greatest death to America is serving the people.
Over a year since the formation of the force on April the 30th, 1980, a bill was approved to form the National Basij Organization. By way of the bill, the Basij is tasked with preventing and countering any foreign military aggression and natural disasters, concrete threats. It's also tasked with countering political, economic, and cultural threats. After the eight-year Iraq-Iran War of the 1980s, the force grew bigger and its activities expanded. Probably the number of Basijis who serve at military organizations are just a fraction of those Basijis doing non-military jobs in universities, workshops, villages, cities, and Islamic seminaries, as well as among nomads and people from various social backgrounds. But first, how the force participated in wartime operations. Mr. Hashemzadeh is the student's Basij demands deputy, meaning he's responsible for voicing expectations of and to the government where it seems to be going astray.
As an ideology and culture, Basij's concern is to preserve the cultural, economic, social, and territorial integrity of the country. There are issues over which opinions are divided, including ethnic and religious matters. Normally, people with diverse religious, dialectical, cultural, and ethnic backgrounds are living in peace and have no problems with each other. But there can be some instances that differences arise between them, and divisions are created, the source of which is known to us all. Basij enters the scene to overcome the division using the capacities of the same communities.
We visited Basij headquarters downtown Tehran to hear the construction or development Basij chief, Sardar or General Zahrai, reminisce.
We continue to adopt the model we used during the 8-year-long in post-war with Iraq. A volunteer would go to the front lines and was assigned to a division either in support, the militia, or the engineering battalion. When you volunteer for a job, you'll be a part of an orderly system. Basij will create that order. Basij showcases its work in the form of providing services. But it has another facet to it, people's combat readiness.
I said the role of the Basij expanded after the war. Well, today it has set course to help in eliminating poverty and materializing the goal of a resistance economy. So I asked of the criteria deciding the poverty line and eligibility for donations in cash or kind.
There's a movement ordered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution called Contribution of the Faithful, which started after the coronavirus pandemic hit, identifying families in need who have been affected by the pandemic, for example, those who've lost their jobs, is the main objective. 1.6 million households were identified. We tried to provide them with relief packages. We also took steps to release prisoners convicted of unintentional crimes. We distributed bags, shoes and tablets, and even helped pay for dowries.
It was on May the 7th, 2000, that the leader issued a directive to establish the development Basij, to encourage the youth to participate in developing agriculture and natural resources in villages and deprived areas. It would result in labor productivity and strengthening job opportunities, among other things. The blow to some natural resources, however, is not going to be easy to compensate, nor can it have helped agriculture. But earnest Basiji youth put in all their effort all the same. Oh, but natural disaster. That cause of sudden death and destruction, loss and poverty is a thing this country is nothing short of. A mini continent of every kind of beauty, Iran has seen enough floods and earthquakes over the past few decades to make up for every blessing it enjoys. And it's at such times that a million strong force, over 10 million strong force that mobilizes the locals as well, comes as a welcome relief. On November the 12th, 2017, an earthquake measuring 7.3 on the Richter scale hit Sarpol-e-Zahab in the western province of Kermanshah, shaking it down to its foundation. Some 90,000 houses were partially or completely damaged by the quake, which took over 660 lives and left more than 10,000 injured. In the early days, when people needed shelters, young jihadi groups collected public donations and distributed essential items to the people, and set up shelters in the area to speed up their work and reduce the cost of building shelters. I did ask, however, whether authorities followed up on the effort to have built up or helped build up houses by now for the afflicted.
One example is that we built 2,200 units in Sarpol-e-Zahab in cooperation with the government and the Housing Foundation. We did not manage the projects, we were merely helping by bringing in volunteers. We built 230 units in Sisak. We're currently working on 250 units in Andika and Bozov. We're also making 600 temporary housing units there. We're doing joint work in Hormozgan. Specialized besieged members provide additional service works, including counseling, generating estimates related to agriculture and the resistive economy, mobilizing besieged women community, as well as artists and athletes to cheer people up, or mobilizing the medical community and dispatching medical teams to different areas.
Not long after Kermanshah, the whole country was swept over. Heavy rainfall in 2019 led to flooding in 28 out of Iran's 31 provinces. It affected over 42 million inhabitants in 253 cities and caused widespread damage to municipal facilities, including health centers and hospitals. In the first hours, under 2,500 jihadi groups went to Khuzestan, about 1,500 groups went to the northern provinces, and 2,000 forces were sent to Lorestan province. That's west to south.
I've recently visited Hormozgan province, and I have seen that Basij has estimated the needed facilities and mobilized all the people and state's facilities to solve the problems. For example, in the city of Fin in Hormozgan, we needed to know how many villages are in the area and how much damage they have sustained. We generated very accurate data, which can be used both by the people or the government.
Imam Khomeini would have had the total number of Basij forces doubled. He said, "Teach the youth that any land must take but a few years to turn into a country with 20 million youngsters ready to take up arms. It must have a 20 million strong army. Such a country would be invulnerable." The country's seen no end to incidents, which is why I wondered if the flooding was a lesson to go for prevention rather than cure. Because a major factor in rain turning to flood was that the dams were not cleaned. Are authorities studying the country for possible calamity in future, and are they taking action to prevent that calamity?
Frankly, we've been a little weak when it comes to prevention. As the crisis unfolds, people's empathy usually helps cover the gaps. People do wonders. Whenever a disaster strikes, people will help regardless of the financial difficulties. The contributions mask our weak responses. This is considered part of the work too. Revolutionary institutions and people bear part of the burden.
A more recent incident occurred in the southern province of Hormozgan, meaning two earthquakes of a magnitude of over 6 on the Richter scale, 14th November.
In the case of the earthquake in Hormozgan, we responded by creating bases. Immediately after an incident occurs, we'll set up the bases considering the area that's been affected. For instance, we put up a national base in Sarpol-e-Zahab because the damage was severe and we needed help from all provinces.
but we responded to the crisis in Sisacht by creating a local base. In the floods of 2019, regional bases were involved.
A creepier calamity has been the one that swept the world since 2019. That would be, yes, COVID-19. As with polio, the Basij took on a vaccination feat. The vaccination process did not meet standards in all centers, which is why I asked how the Basij or Basij mobilized individuals would have been meeting required criteria, such as checking vaccine subjects for fever.
Basij assumed the duty of helping solve this problem. It made different moves, including attending hospitals, performing bureau rides, things that people were afraid to do in the beginning. We saw the medical potential of our specialized members, so we sent them to help in the health and medical sector. They helped with vaccinations. A very large vaccination center was established in this complex we are at, the former U.S. Embassy.
A short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
More to be said on the matter, but first a quick media review to see what other outlets have to say. And which outlets will we be picking at today? IRNA, the national news agency, quotes Iran's military chief, as do other outlets. That would be Major General Bagheri, calling for acquiring greater offensive capabilities by drawing on scientific capabilities of Basiji and non-Basiji scientists. Iran has felt threatened for the past 40 years and more, and that feeling materialized physically, say, since 2007, when generally Israeli attacks assassinated nuclear scientists and nuclear facilities. Now, what did Bagheri say exactly? Boosting ability to target threat centers, a strategic policy, runs the headline. He outlined science and technology are one of the main drivers and engine of progress. Workers of the field of the industry have considered the increase of deterrence in the field of defense and military as the forefront of their strategies, as the guarantor of strengthening Islamic Iran. Mehr News reads, tactical exercise of Basij's Fatahin special unit kicks off. Now, what is deterrence military might if no one knows of it to keep off? Tactical exercises can be the answer. They can in themselves be deterrent, just as they are practice for the forces to keep agile and their morale boosted. The Fatahin or Conquerors will be holding the three-day exercise with 1,000 special personnel present, and part of the exercise will be ambush and counter-ambush techniques and shooting with specialized weapons in practicing operations against terrorist groups and Takfiri groups. Tehran Times quotes the leader, enemies after destroying, nullifying Basij. Well, if there are enemies, numerous enemies after Iran, surely they'll be most wary of their enemy at the front. That's the forces, namely the ready to jump on a mine forces, the Basij. What Ayatollah Khamenei called a God-given reserve and manifestation of national power. In defending the country and its independence and stability in providing vital services on a national scale in leading scientific activities and new technologies and valued approaches and creating a spiritual atmosphere It is the name of Basij that comes up and the presence of Basij that draws attention, the leader wrote. And he called on Basiji forces to further concentrate on thwarting the enemy's plots, naturally. That'll be it for the news segment. Do stay tuned. War, be it waged by another country or another life form, unites. So with an outbreak such as the corona pandemic, a less friendly Basiji presence in cities in the earlier years of the revolution has partly been forgotten to the forces' services with the pandemic and likes. In fact, 50% of the corona vaccination process nationwide since it got underway has been up to the Basij. That organization joined forces with the health ministry by agreement. The agreement enforced longer working hours for both entities to double vaccine administering as reported on September the 13th.
When the pandemic started, there weren't enough goods available, such as masks and other personal protective equipment, to cover people's demands. So Basij started producing them. Then they helped the medical staff in hospitals, and recently they contributed to the vaccination program. And we are witnessing the extent of their contribution. When the government, meaning the governmental institutions and executive bodies, are unable to work on their own, people provide assistance to fulfill their needs. That's what Basij is all about.
While we are on the topic of disease and vaccines, in the 1990s, polio was this country's nightmare. More than 9 million children under the age of 5 would have to be vaccinated to eradicate the disease. Would have taken the healthcare system alone time. But within just 24 hours, 8.5 million children across the country were vaccinated against polio with the participation of Basij forces through a door-to-door vaccination campaign. Thing is, they rally the people to help where their own numbers fall short.
Basij is like a university that trains people with specific capabilities and skills scientifically and religiously, which enables them to work in different fields and play an effective role based on what's needed at the time. We need to take that into account too. For example, when an earthquake strikes, people are grappling with its consequences. As you know, the capabilities of the people, NGOs and grassroots organizations have always been greater than those of the government.
Since the autumn of 2008, the Basij has had a considerable presence in cyberspace. The first step was the launch of 10,000 blogs from 10,000 Basij bases to provide the internet with virtuous content. The second phase took place in 2009 with the establishment of the Cyber Council of the Basij. How the council went about things was it began training warriors for cyber warfare. By 2017, there were 18,000 people in the task force that monitored and reported on news stories and recent online activity, especially any activities by the opposition. That's according to the deputy of Iran's chief prosecutor, Abdusamad Khorramabadi. Deputy prosecutor of that time, that is.
There is a wide range in that regard. The Basij organization assigns the roles and dispatches the volunteers. For example, when we set up a vaccination center, put medical students at the front line where people need to be treated. In terms of other services, however, including those related to organizing the patients and so on, we use graduates of other fields of study that may not require special expertise in those areas. We have a special capacities. The student Basij centers have created good research facilities in universities across the country.
Back to our focus. The Basij has several branches. There are three main armed wings. That's the Ashura and Al-Zahra brigades that are the security and military branch tasked with defending the neighborhoods in case of emergencies, the Imam Hussein brigades, and the Imam Ali brigades. The force also has multiple branches with specialized functions, meaning civilian functions. They include the development or Sazandegi Basij, Basij of the Guilds, Basij of the Nomads, and the Student Basij. Members can be men or women, young or old, and they are grouped as three types. Regular forces, those are the unpaid volunteers who receive perks such as university spots, active members, and special members. With 54,000 bases across the country, Basij is probably the biggest cultural, social, and military popular network in the world.
One mistake people often make in defining Basij is coupling it with the Basij organization. It's an organization that's helping out and assuming the role of a national player. But Basij is made of patriotic people who are ready to do something for their country. Their thoughts and views may be different, but they are concerned for the country and are hopeful for its future, so they want to do something about it. That describes Basij. As late Imam Khomeini and the leader of the Islamic Revolution have put it, they can look like me or have another appearance, but they are compassionate either way.
It's a group of people happy to show up and put all their talents to use wherever there's room to serve a holy cause. Sacrifice is at the core. The given definition of a Basiji concludes, faith originates from the heart of Basijis and makes them work hard. Similarly, insight tells them how to proceed, how to identify the criteria, and how to tread the path. The Basij's budget is modest. Our Basij chief explained how the force had remained true to its cause, however.
There are several groups and institutions that collect donations. One is the Red Crescent, and the other is the Imam Khomeini Relief Committee, which collects aid for the deprived. Basij has also collected donations in some instances, but not all, including in the aftermath of the 2019 floods. But we have collected goods for Hormozgan. When we're collecting financial aid, we deposit the sums in a joint account that all cities have so that the government, the Friday prayer leader, the representatives of the leader of the Islamic Revolution in different cities, and the IRGC know about it. As you know, Basij has the largest capillary network in the country. There are 54,000 Basij centers across the country.
What the Basij, or originally underprivileged mobilized resistance forces, identifies with in essence is the word resistance, which has also inspired the resistance front of more recent times in standing up to the hostility of domineering powers. Interestingly, when Chief of the Pakistani Army, Lieutenant General Qamar Javed Bajwa, visited Tehran in 2017, he said that Pakistan is interested in learning from Iran's experience of creating the Basij organization and using popular forces to counter enemy threats.
Neighboring countries, including Iraq and Syria, have been able to make similar moves. They have been able to surmount problems where they created popular groups alongside their armies. When Imam Khomeini ordered the formation of a student Basij in 1979, they recommended that the resistance nuclei be formed across the Islamic world. We have seen them in action in recent years. When it comes to defending the holy shrines in Syria, for example, the people of Syria and other countries helped solve the crisis. If it wasn't for the people, the armies wouldn't be able to pull that off.
And that's all there's room for here and now. But surely there'll be plenty more to present when or if the next natural disaster occurs to call for aid. Hopefully not by next week. But do join us then at the same time. Bye for now.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and I'm invited by Brother Mahdi to this segment of the program. Today, I'd like to read to you a passage about Islamic lifestyle according to Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This passage is extracted from a book titled The Life of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, written by the great Iraqi Muslim historian and scholar Allama Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi. This great Muslim scholar and historian was born in 1344 AH in the city of Najaf. He's well known for his books on the biography and conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Please stay with me. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, peace be upon him, prevented the Muslims from drinking wine, for it is among the mortal sins. He, peace be upon him, said, "Indeed, the one who is alcoholic is like the one who worships the idol. Wine makes him shake and destroys his manhood. It makes him violate the prohibitions such as shedding blood and committing fornication."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. When we're talking about the different conversations and the beautiful dialogues that Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam had, we find that in these conversations, even though they were small and concise and relatively short, sometimes just a question and an answer, but this is considered a conversation, we find that there is a whole vast universe of wisdom and knowledge which is being exchanged in these conversations. In one of these conversations, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam is asked by his companion to talk about the qualities of a bad friend. It's very interesting in today's world, 1,400 years later, we find that making friends and keeping friends is one of the most critical things which happens in the life of every individual. The kind of friends you have really influence your decisions and influence your life. If you have good friends, by the will and grace and favor of Allah, you have a higher probability of being good. But if, God forbid, for some reason, you have bad friends, there is a much higher probability that you will be bad. I mean, so if you're raised with killers and criminals and robbers and druggies and alcoholics, the chances are that's what you're going to turn out to be. But on the other hand, if you grow up in a good environment, a good family, no drugs, no alcohol, no lies, no bad stuff, right? You grow up in a religious environment, a pious environment, then the chances are that you will also turn out to be good. Of course, by the will and the grace and the blessings of Allah. So talking about the bad friend, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam replies, "The friend who takes care of you when you are rich but abandons you when you are poor is a bad friend." Isn't this what we see sometimes? And isn't this what we have witnessed in our lives? That when we had wealth and money and power and fame and glory
and we had, you know, cars and houses, and we were eating at great restaurants, then these certain people, they were our best friends, enjoying all the pleasures when we had all the wealth. But when the wealth ran out, and the power and the money and the glory and the fame ran out, and we didn't have too much in our pocket, we could no longer afford to go to those expensive fancy restaurants or drive in expensive cars or go to expensive places, when we weren't able to do this, well, that friend ran out on us. That friend forgot us. That friend abandoned us. This, dear friends, is not a good friend. This is dialogue, Imam al-Baqir, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
To try to relate our condition to the conditions of Imam al-Baqir, see some parallels, although it's not exactly the same. We do have some differences here. But I'm going to focus on the similarities. And then look at Imam al-Baqir, salamullahi alayhi, what he presented. There's a methodology that he presented in order for the Muslim community on all levels. All Muslims agree on the Quran. And they should. This is the word of God. Everyone refer to the Quran. Any difference, refer to the Quran. The Quran has guidance in it. If anything is attributed to the Prophet, if it doesn't match the Quran, if it conflicts with the Quran, contradicts the Quran, that's not what the Prophet has said. And if we do that, we said not enough is available to us from the sayings of the Imams. That's true. But the word of God is available to us. Problem on that one is we didn't go to it. We're not referring to it. The Quran does have a right on the day of judgment to say we didn't go to it. Which of us goes to the Quran? Even those of us who perhaps have memorized the Quran, we don't refer to the Quran. It's not about memorizing the words of the Quran only. And I'm bragging about I've memorized the Quran, I can read this backwards and this way and that way and skip a verse and flip to this page and so on and so forth. So what? What's your understanding of the Quran? This is the book of not riddles, not games. This is the book of guidance. What guidance did you take from it? If you learned it for riya, you didn't learn a word of it. Memorize the entirety of the Quran. So what? You memorize the entirety of the Quran. Who says it's important to memorize the Quran in that way? What we have is to preserve the Quran. Part of that is just for some to memorize the Quran. But preserving it more than memorizing the words is preserving the meaning within you and implementing it and getting it out, all of us knowing that. That's what preservation of the Quran is. Hifz of the Quran. We just say, oh, hifz means memorization. Who says hifz means memorization? Preserve the Quran. Yes, if you have that talent, you have the time, at the right time, that's fine. But that's not what that is emphasizing. What it's emphasizing is preserve the meanings of the Quran in your mind, in the community, in society.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
what you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.